Greetings, this is the Automatically Deleted Husband, and this message is specifically with Susanna as the focus. Some people may recall Susanna is my daughter, and I wanted to tell her a little bit of my history, and not only long before I met her mom, my wife, but also of late since I've been abandoned. Remember, I was abandoned. I did not abandon my family. My family abandoned me. I just want to keep that in mind. But because an event occurred Saturday, so I want to preface it. Long ago, you know, as a young guy, I was the guy who rode the bike constantly, and I would go for miles and miles and miles and miles. And but then I got, you know, got a car, got in the Air Force, and after a couple of years in March Air Force Base in California, I filled out what was called the dream sheet and asked to say, can I go to Europe? And shortly thereafter, I was in Europe. So I did spend 2 years in Europe. And one of the joys I had is I do enjoy walking. When I was in Europe for those 2 years, I walked and I walked and I walked because I left my car here. No, I sold my car and went to Europe, and I didn't drive for 2 years. I was always the passenger, but then I walked. But it's not just simply walking my community, because I walked, for example, the streets of London. You know, went to things like obviously Buckingham Palace and their big parliament building and so forth. Walked around there, walked to some museums and so forth. Did some serious walking. I walked Paris, you know, obviously the Eiffel Tower, the Arc de Triomphe, you know, and Napoleon's tomb and places like that in there. So walked all around there, you know, didn't take a bus, walked. Also went nearby is the Palace of Versailles. And just walking the palace, that was a pretty decent walk too. Been to Athens, Greece, and there we didn't walk as much, but we did walk the Acropolis. I was only there one day. Walked in Amsterdam, I think I was only there one day, so it wasn't that much. And Maastricht in Holland, both those. And I think I was there twice and did some walking, especially on the rivers there and so forth. Frankfurt in Germany, because that was like a half-hour train ride from where I was, and it was easy to get on a train, go to Frankfurt, and go places. You know, one of the first things I did shortly after I got to Europe is I got on the train, and I didn't know what I was doing. Got on the train, went to Frankfurt, and watched the Carpenters in concert. They performed a concert there in Frankfurt, which was fascinating. It was a joy. Been to Munich, went to the zoo there, for example. Went to Hamburg. And the thing about Hamburg is I was there for several weeks. Well, at least a week at a time, I think twice, because we have family there. So I went to visit family. Did some serious walking there, because you know there is the river heads out to the ocean. Saw a lot of stuff. Went to a lot of places, including the zoo. also I lived in Wiesbaden, which is near Frankfurt, and there sometimes, you know, some days like a Saturday or whatnot, I would simply start walking. And walked. And said, oh, I'll go down that street. Oh, I'll go down the street. and walked for miles and miles. And that was the joy. One of the most noteworthy was I was in Brussels, Belgium. Did a little bit of walking. But one day, Saturday, I was with a group of four, five or six people. We were in a hotel. And we were different lifestyles. So one Saturday morning, I just walked out the hotel and started walking. Didn't know where I was going, and I walked, and I walked, and I walked. And the thing that really struck me that day is I got to a place and said, oh, this must be some sort of like a capitol building or whatnot for Belgium, because, you know, Brussels is the capital of Belgium. And there was kind of a wall there that you were at the top of, and with the big overlook and whatnot, and you could see a lot of the city. It was really a magnificent view. But the thing that I remember so much about that moment is there was this building, there was some people around, you know, reasonable amount of people. And all the people I was with were far away. I had no idea where I was. And it was probably one of the moments where I've never felt so alone. Because no one knew where I was. And, you know, I'm not just simply out of town. I'm way out of country. And it was a very vivid moment to me. I felt so remarkably alone. Kind of like what I feel today. But the other thing is, started in Europe, in Germany, Volksmarching. People's marching or walking. It was something sponsored by, I think the state sponsors it somewhat. You can read about it. And it would encourage people to get out and walk and go to a particular place, and they'd set out a course. And I did two or three at least. And you would go, I think you would, I don't know if we had to pay for something or not, but you'd end up a little token gesture item, you know, a little medal kind of thing saying that you walked it. I don't know if I have them anymore. I don't recall seeing them. But I did that three or four times. Most of these were probably 5K or 10K. You know, obviously, especially in Europe, measuring kilometers. So 3 to 6 miles or so. And they were delightful because they were typically kind of semi-wooded areas, the ones we did. But that's walking. You know, I've tried running. You may be aware that when we were in Woodville, I did a race with Tirza. No, she blew me away. I'm a terrible runner. I walked or raced my friend Chris, and you know he's 6 inches shorter than I am, and about 6 years younger than I am, and he blew me away. So I'm not a good runner. Walker, well, that's different. You may recall also, as a family, I think one of the longest walks we took as a family. We've gone to some places that we would walk, but I think the longest walk I can recall as a family is when we were at the Outer Banks. And one day we started, we went to the beach and we walked north and we walked and we walked. And then we came back via the road. And I think that was well over 3 miles, if not more. But that was probably one of the longest walks we did as a family. And of course, we had obviously young people with us at the time, so that made it a little more difficult. But it was a joy. It was a joy because I was with my family. Wonderful thing. But for me personally, when I got to my late 50s, and I was alone at that time, unfortunately, I started serious walking. Because, you know, in 2012, my car overheated. And since that day, I haven't had a car. Occasionally I've rented, I've driven somebody else's car, especially one gentleman, I was driving his truck for him at, you know, because he had a suspended license, so I would drive him occasionally. But otherwise, in the last 2 or 3 years, I think I've driven once. That was my friend Jim Leonard. He came here with his truck, and then I drove him in his truck to Chattanooga. But basically, that's it. I don't drive. I have no desire for a car anymore whatsoever. But I walk. And I don't walk a little bit. I walk a lot. So when I was in my late 50s, I started doing this aggressively. And when I started, I was at the end in Cleveland. I don't know if you would remember it. There's the Greenway. And I was living near the southern end of it. So I said, okay, I'm going to try to walk more. I'd walk to the end of the Greenway, which was roughly a half mile, and then walk about a mile. And what I started to do is I took a book with me because I was in the process of reading a particular book. And I would go and sit on a bench, the bench in front of the Church of God's world headquarters. would sit there on the bench, read a bit, and then walk back. So the round trip was about 3 miles. And that was comfortable. I was fine. Occasionally, I would go a little further, go all the way to the Cook's, the grocery store. So that was about brought it up to like 4 or 5 miles. And it's kind of that was some effort, especially coming back with some groceries. But that changed because the Greenway is 4.2 miles from end to end. So instead of doing a mile or almost 2 miles going to the store, I started going a little further and then turned around and came back and then went further and then went further to the point that one day I was about 60 years old. It was 2016. I got to the end. So, and the thing that again, I find so fascinating is got to the end. There's a sign there. It says end of Greenway. And again, it's one of those moments when you really, okay, I finally made it. Now I have to walk back. So the whole trip, you know, 4.2 miles on the Greenway, both directions then, and the additional mile to get there. So it was about a 9 mile trip, but I could do it. And I was tired afterwards. Then some things occurred, and you know, one of the things that I've said before, be a student of yourself. And so things occurred, and I tried to figure, okay, what is appropriate for me? First thing happened is when I started doing the longer, not the complete yet, but going a little further on the Greenway, I was starting to end up with shin splints, you know, this sharp pains in your legs. And it was happening at about the first mile, mile and a half. And I wasn't sure what to do. So what I did was ignored it and kept going. It was painful. But about 2-3 minutes later, maybe 5 minutes later, it was gone. And I had to do this maybe 5-10 times. I haven't had shin splints since. So I pushed through it. Just continue to walk. First time or two, because I didn't know what was happening, I slowed down. After that, I didn't slow down. The pain came. I just kept walking. And again, I haven't had those pains since. The other thing I had is called heel spurs. And I don't know how that happened. But it was a problem, and it hurt. It hurt serious. And I found a website called HeelThatPain.com. And they have a little pad that you put in that puts a little pressure on your foot in a particular way. And I bought a pair of those, stuck them in my boots. And after it basically stopped the pain when I was wearing them. But after 2 or 3 months of wearing them, I didn't have to wear them anymore. It actually did heal it. So that problem is gone. I haven't had that problem since. And, you know, again, this is maybe 5-6 years ago. So again, I want to encourage you, when you have a problem, don't panic. I don't know what to do. You know, listen to other people's ideas. Try something. And it's probably not going to be a pill that's going to help you, but maybe an exercise or maybe ignoring it. The other thing that occurred to me by the time I was 63 is I was ending up with really stiff legs that my legs didn't want to bend. And I didn't know what the cause of that was. And on my 65th birthday, still having the stiff leg problems, my friend Chris and I, we hiked to the top of Big Frog Mountain. We drive to a parking lot, then we do a 5.5 mile hike and a 0.5 mile up to the top. And then obviously reverse on the way back. So 11 mile round trip. And it's comfortable. It was comfortable now, except at that time my legs were stiff. But when I got to the top, I did the normal thing. That was when I was. I did the normal thing of jumping jacks, because jumping jacks is one of the things I do now a lot. And so I did 65 at the top of Big Frog. But the stiff legs was a problem. Somebody gave me a suggestion. Try magnesium. And I tried it. Problem's gone. I tried various ones because some of the magnesiums in pill form made me tired. And that wasn't good. I found a liquid form from a company Trace Minerals. Yeah, I think it's what it's called. Out of Utah. And tried that. and I stick that in my smoothie in the morning and whatnot. And I haven't had problems with my legs since, and now it's been years. So that's what you might call a supplement. I have learned to take vitamin C because vitamin C, what I found, the thing that showed up with me is I would have spasms occasionally at night, you know, which the kind of jerk and whatnot. I started taking the vitamin C. They're gone. Because I did find through some research that there may be a correlation, and with me, there was. So the vitamin C is now a very much, and I use a thing called ester C. I recommend it. It seems to be the right one for me. And the other thing is, I do use vitamin D, especially, you know, because again, the important thing about vitamin D, if you look at the alleged a high death count from COVID-19 in 2021, I think it was, a huge percentage of that was people with low vitamin D. And I find, especially in winter, this idea of getting feeling sick, whatnot, doesn't happen anymore at all. I haven't been sick per se, but you have that onset feeling, and it doesn't happen because I take a lot of vitamin D. So I do use supplements. I do not use medications. But again, the other thing that occurred, which is I found that in the long walks, I was getting muscle cramps. I remember because you know, you remember me, I was the guy who always wore the nice dress pants and whatnot. I haven't worn that in 2 or 3 years, anything like that. I wear karate pants, not once in a while, all the time. That's all I wear. I don't do karate, but all I wear is karate pants. I haven't zipped up a zipper or tied a belt. I do have, it's a string kind of belt, but not a leather belt, in I think at least 3 years. But so it's easy to lift up my leg, the pant leg, to look at my legs. And, you know, I was getting to the point that I would take a long hike, you know, 12 miles, and look at my leg, and you can see how the muscles cramped up. It's kind of like, this hurts. And it hurts a lot. So I was having the muscle cramp problem. One of the things I did is I got something called No Muscle Cramps. Again, it's from the same company, the Trace Minerals. It's apparently comes from Salt Lake City, or from Salt Lake itself. It works. I don't have muscle cramps at all anymore. So again, I want to encourage you to be a student of yourself. So one of the things I started doing is on my Greenway hikes, I started to time myself. So I figured, okay, it's 8.4 miles round trip, and I wanted to do it at least a 4 mile an hour pace. I started timing myself in 2016, November of 2016, and I didn't make it at all but the first time. But in January of 2017, I did it. I got to the 4 mile an hour pace, and I was pleased. I thought, you know, this is good, but I couldn't stop. So I pushed. Sometimes I would only time one way because I would get to the end, and then I would come back a different route because I would go to the store, for example. A lot of times I would only time one way, and I was getting faster and faster to the point that there was one day I actually did the trip three times. I did 29 miles in one day. I had a good night's sleep that night. because if you go to kozlowski.org/health, you'll see there's a times thing there. And you can see the various times that I recorded, because I got to under 2 hours for the round trip, which pleased me back in 2017. But I kept trying to go faster and faster, and most of it was the one-way route because, again, I was going back other ways. But I got to the point that I would do the round trip instead of in 2 hours. My best round trip time is an hour and 50 minutes and 5 seconds. And so that was done in 2020. And that's 4.7 miles an hour out, 4.57 back. So, a lot faster than 4 miles an hour. And then on my 66th birthday, February of this year, I measured one way, and because at the other end, I met my friend Chris. But I did 4.87 miles an hour. And my goal is, I wanted to get to 5. I didn't. So the issue is, I walked over 4 miles and almost 5 miles an hour. And, you know, I'm 66. So that's a good pace. So the question is, how good of a pace is that? I haven't been able to make that time again. I did 4.64 was the last time, my measured time. So I'm troubled. But, you know, my best time was at my birthday this year. So there was something I wanted. I wanted to do it with others. I take long hikes with my friend Chris, and we typically go in the mountains. The hope is, even this week, to go again for maybe the third or fourth time. Well, right there. There's the picture right there. This is Buzzard Point. And this is the picture I took of him. Buzzard, it's a great picture. But we've been up there several times. And when you get to the top of a place, you're basically, you get to the edge, and then you have a little bit of a crawling to do, because you go from one rock to another. You can go to a whole bunch more rocks. We don't do that. but you get to the one rock, and it's roughly 30 feet diameter, kind of mostly flat surface on the top, and you're standing there, and basically every direction except forward and backward, a narrow spot, is a vertical drop of 120 feet. So again, I have that picture there, and it can be unnerving. And especially once we got this picture to see where we stood, it's kind of like, so the natural thing for me is again, I do the jumping jacks now. And so I did 128 jumping jacks at the top of Buzzard Point. So I might do that again this week. Your dad is strange. But I wanted to do a fast walk. Chris and I do long walks together. I wanted to do a fast walk, a race walk. And I'm not sure if you're aware, but a race walk, you know, running is, you know, running, you understand running. Race walking is where you always have one foot on the ground. And when your leg passes under you, it's straight. Your knees aren't bent. So those are the two things that distinguish. There's also what they call power walking, where you can bend your knees a bit, because sometimes people can't. And when I do, for example, going uphill, I effectively go to the power walking mode, because, you know, because I walk up steep hills. I can walk up a steep hill virtually losing no speed. Walking down, I have to slow down dramatically. I can go up quite easily. I wanted to do something where I had someone else to walk with me fast. Chris is a great friend. We do a lot of long distance stuff, but he's not as fast as I am. So I wanted to do that. So Saturday, I did something I have never done before. And for what I understand, my Susanna has I wasn't told this. I found this out by looking at the North Hills website. Found out that apparently my Susanna plays basketball and does well at that or something. So that's all I know. I'd like to know more, but obviously, just a reminder, this wall full of postcards. It's these postcards, and one of them was sent to my Susanna today. Part of the reason was to tell her I walked Saturday and that I'm doing it today. But my assumption is in a week or two, it'll be on the wall here, because they refused. Come back, return to sender. And all the images are online of all these. Kozlowska.org/promise. You know, just like the card says, they're all online, all the images, before they're sent. And unfortunately, when they come back, and when the physical cards are right here on the wall, well over 60 of them now. And I assume, again, my card to Susanna will be there in a week or two. But I wanted to get to a place where I would walk with others. Race walking, from what I understand, 100 years ago, it was a far more popular sport. It was even a sport people would bet on, you know, choose their favorite walker and bet on them. And that's not true anymore. But running still is. And there is some race walking events, including national ones. I went to a race, a 5K race, because I figure 5K distance, that's nothing. 3.1 miles, nothing. And so to prepare that day, I started the morning by taking a walk to Publix, which is about 3.25 miles. So a little bit over the 5K race I would do. And I tried to do it at a reasonable pace just to kind of prepare myself for that, because the race was going to be at 6:30 at night, which is kind of like, ugh. But so I walked to Publix. Then I walked back, visited the one farmer at the farmer's market, and came home. So I did a 7-mile round trip kind of as a warm-up for the day. Then I was planning to walk to the park where the race would start. And my friend Chris was actually visiting his mom here in Cleveland. So he came by, picked me up, and drove me there. He actually sponsored me for the trip, for the race. He didn't stay because obviously he was going to run late. So I was in a group, a field of 99 runners, actually 98 runners and one race walker. Everyone there, 98 of them at least, had their sneakers on. And of course, I was wearing boots. And because I walk in boots. Again, going back to the idea of being a student of yourself, when we were in Woodville, I read an article from a gentleman, because I was starting to have problems with my knees, read an article from a gentleman who is a podiatrist, and he said, elevate your heel, that might work, otherwise see me for surgery. And surgery doesn't sound like a good idea to me. And that's when I started wearing boots. The first set of boots I wore for a long time were quite heavy. These are Lucchese's. They're as light as can be. They're as light as, probably about as light as tennis shoes. And the issue is they're expensive, but they last. These are about 2.5 years old. And they're the only pair I wear, and I get the heels replaced well over a dozen times already. They're about worn out, but you know they got, like I say, about 2,500 miles at least on them. So again, I was the guy in the boots race walking, and it was noticed because I wasn't. You know, I mean, these people are running. And what happened is, you know, again, it's what I can do. I'm not a runner, but what happened was I found out about a race. It was earlier in October, and this is when the hurricane came. So I figured, okay, I'm not sure, because it was supposed to come and we're supposed to get drenched and, you know, an inch of rain. Didn't happen. It missed us completely, but I didn't register it before, so I didn't go to that one because there was another one coming up. And I figured maybe that's the one to go to, which is indeed the one I went to. Part of the reason it was important is because the organization that sponsored it. And what I plan to do is, in the coming days, it may take a week or more, I intend to send this. I'm going to send this to Jim Cross, because if I send it to my wife, she'll send it back. And I'm hoping I'll send it to Jim Cross, and he'll be able to get it to you. But several things that I got at the race. One was a t-shirt. There's the back. Here's the back. Run for their freedom. When your mom met me, I was not a light-duty pro-life activist. I took it seriously. I invested a huge amount of time as a single guy, and a lot of money over the years, in pro-life activity. I did it politically, and I did it ministry-wise. I think my political stuff was mistaken, but that's another issue. But the ministry's part especially. You know, I was on the board of directors of the Greensboro Pregnancy Care Center for about a decade. Had wonderful relationships, tremendous learning experience, wonderful opportunities. And I took it seriously, because it was an act of love. You'll find that one of the other things that I've studied a lot, and you won't see it on the back wall, but on the side wall, there are pictures of slaves. And I've done several videos on slaves. A lot of them were, you know, especially I have this picture of this girl in the Ivory Coast harvesting cocoa. And she just has to be tugging my heart. So I've studied a lot on slavery. And I've mentioned a gentleman, Oleg Melnikov, who I learned about a couple years ago, I think. And when I, you know, I had originally this set of pictures on the wall, and then the two rows on top were new. But there's some more pictures on the wall there, and there are pictures here on this wall. The pictures here are a gentleman, Phuc Thong. And I've mentioned before, you know, I really feel a bond to this man. Because I've seen him, I was introduced to him in a video, and I've seen now several of him, where he would go to abortion clinics in near Saigon, in Vietnam, get the aborted babies. I mean, not, you know, a lot of them are quite large. Take them, and in his hands, put them in a pot. Put a name or a number on them. And then put them in a graveyard. Not a public graveyard, his graveyard. And he has three of them. I think it's 16,000 bodies, children he's buried in his own personal graveyard. And he's also gone to the point of going to moms and say, either give me your kid or stay with me. And he has in his home, not in an in somebody else's place, in his home, he has, with his wife and his own kids, bunches and bunches of other women and other kids living with him. I respect this guy a whole lot. Oleg Melnikov, when he was 18, I've described him, he's a very big guy, strong, and he would go in his native Russia and free slaves. And he's freed over 1,900 of them over a period of just over a decade, I think. And apparently, it cost him his life. His picture is on my wall. The irony of the timing is I put those pictures of him on the wall, apparently about the same time, maybe even the same day he disappeared. So, to go to, this is an organization here in Cleveland. Willow Bend Farms. Their focus is on sex slavery here in Cleveland. So, it was a big deal to be a part of this. It was a really big deal to be a part of this. While there, in the intro, I met another lady and talked with her several times, actually. Another group called Her Song, which is out of Florida. And apparently, I think they have a place in Georgia and in Chattanooga. She's out of Chattanooga. They do the same thing. Sex slavery. It gets to me. So I did something I'd never done before. I entered an athletic event. And I wore one of these. You know, so, you know, you can go to the website and the race. I'll leave the links. And I was number 1603. And you can see 99 runners. Number 83 was me. In the 60 plus, there were three other people who were runners. And they beat me. but for the race walkers, I was the first and the last. But one of the things I did afterwards is I said, okay, my goal was to beat 40 minutes. I figured if I beat 40 minutes, I'm okay. And I did, what was it? I did 39 minutes, 15 seconds. So 12:38 per mile, which is a good time. So I checked. I checked some national races, race walking races for people of my age bracket. And I would place either fourth or second in those races. So it's reasonable to say that for a race walker who is 66 years old in the U.S., it appears I'm in the top 10 comfortably. So, Susanna, that's your dad. You want to take me on in a race? Seriously. You know, when it was over, I get the token, you know, it's, you know, everybody gets one, right? You finish, you get one. So I have this. I'm going to send this to you because I hope it will be a symbol to you. That's my dad. You may not know that much about me anymore. This is your dad. I'm not going to send it immediately because one of the things that was difficult after I completed the race, you know, coming into the to the finish line, it is you know, these things are electronic. There's a little tag on here. It's kind of like the things that a lot of products have, where it's measured via radio waves. So you go through a sensor, tags you on the way out, and then tags you on the way back. It gives you a very precise time. And that's why when the crowd started, you know, I had to wait like 20 seconds to cross the starting line because of the crowd in front of me. But that doesn't matter because my time started when I crossed the starting line, not when, you know, the gun time, as they call it. And you can see that on the website. So when I came back, they have the big counter there showing this is the counter. And it's what they call the gun time. And I saw, okay, I'm beating 40 minutes comfortably. But when you take off my delay, you know, I beat it quite comfortably. So I'm pleased. And it's an encouragement. But the reason when it was done, I did visit with a lot of people, talk with a lot of people. I tried to encourage people. Because a lot of these people were active in this ministry. I don't know if any of them were actually being served by the ministry. But after that was done, I did my 3.1 mile, you know, 5K. I did another 2 mile hike because I walked alone home in the dark. And I came to an empty house. And it rips you apart. A married man with 9 kids to come home to an empty house will rip you apart. On the route home, I pass by Miss Lillian. If you go to some of the other videos, the voicemails I've done, I talk about Miss Lillian. You know, I say, and it looks like I'm comfortably in the top 10. nationwide for a 66-year-old race walker. Miss Lillian is around number 1, 2, or 3, depending upon which year it is, for runners in the 93-year-old bracket, the 90-plus bracket. You'll find I mentioned a lot James 1:27. True religion or true worship is this: to visit orphans and widows in their affliction and keep oneself unstained from the world. I live that out in several ways, but and it's really become a priority, is Miss Lillian. Again, one of the reasons that really gets to me about her is she's the one time she told me, "You're the only one that visits me." She does have her son visit, her 56-year-old son, who does visit her a lot, takes care of her, does a lot of things for her, drives her places, whatnot, although she drives herself. But she's a runner. She may be retiring, because the last time she ran, she had some difficulties. But, 93, well. But when I walked by her house, the lights were on, and I said, "No, I'm not going to knock. Didn't want to go to the door. It's nighttime." But often I see her when I walk by, when I go to the farmer's market, and we talk, sometimes for a few minutes, sometimes for 2 hours. Again, James 1:27. And my purpose is just to mostly listen. It's called an act of love. I hope it's a model you will follow. But I'm going to put this in the bag I carry when I go to the farmer's market. And I want to be able to go to her and say, "Look, I did it too," in order to help cement the bond that we have, which we've had now for about 2 years. And when that's done, I want to put this in the mail with the t-shirt and the bag and the bib, and send it to my Susanna, because I want her to know a little bit about her dad. One other thing you'll find, it was February 4th of 2020, a little under two years ago. I did a video that I put online. It's even on YouTube, but I get my traffic mostly on BitChute. Eliud Kipchoge, brother and pace sitter. He's a man who, shortly before this, ran a marathon. Again, nothing like me. And he did it in under 2 hours. He's the first person on record to do that. He is the world record holder before this for the marathon. And he had some additional equipment. The shoes, he had pace setters running with him. And he had that would peel off and new ones come in. I think it was 40, 41 pace setters that he had. And he just ran the whole thing. But it was fascinating to see them peel off. But then he had a vehicle in front of him that would use lasers to mark on the road, this is the path to take, and to keep him on pace. So it's not official, but he ran a marathon in under 2 hours. And I watched the conclusion of that, especially the photo that I used. You have two guys behind him, and the expression of joy in their face is fantastic after he crosses the finish line in under 2 hours, 1:59:40, I think it was. But something else, and you see it in the photo. First thing he did, crossed the finish line, got an embrace from his wife. That is such a big deal. It is an intensely big deal. And I crossed the finish line. I beat my 40-minute goal. And there was no one there. Yeah, there are people. They handed me this as I crossed the finish line. I went, I got a bottle of water, because, and then actually I walked around it's a park for a bit, because it took a little bit out of me. And then I started conversations with people there. But there was no one there to greet me. No one there saying, I want you to do this. So one of the big purposes behind this to my Susanna, because I don't know what's happened in your life. One day soon, perhaps one day already, there'll be a man in your life, Lord willing, and you'll become one with him. And Lord willing, spend the rest of your days together. In 2012, 13 time frame or so, maybe 14, whatever, I wrote an article. All men are jerks. Love them. The best you're going to get is an absolute jerk to be a husband to you, Susanna. It's the best you can get. Love him well. Never turn from him. You know, you are bound to him. You know, Romans 7, 1 Corinthians 7, just a little trivia stuff that I know. I think you might have a Bible there at home, perhaps under some dust or whatnot. But it's what it says, and it's what it means. In other words, my wife is bound to me as long as the husband is alive and I'm alive. Going to the state is going to another God. It's a disobedience to Christ. I want to encourage you. The man that you become one with, encourage him. If he's a runner, if he does something else. You know, I've watched people go up real high. It's kind of like, ah! Whatever it is that he may do in the physical realm. Maybe it's something he does in the intellectual realm. Maybe he's simply an assembly line worker. Maybe he's a farmer. Whatever he is, he's yours. Encourage him. Beyond all things, encourage him. What's going to happen is you alone can make or break him. Especially now that I have time to invest in a lot of men who no longer have their lady. That's the common thing I find, is the woman can make or break a man. There are men who, I mean, you're not going to read about in some big magazine or find on the 6 o'clock news or, you know, make historic events and whatnot. But they're bound to a lady, and you can see a joy between them. Susanna lived that kind of life. A very big part of it is dependent on you. The jerk you get as a husband, encourage him. Never turn from him. I'm sorry, the model that you have set before you by the woman I love and adore is not that model. I want to encourage you. Please. I'm keeping the promise. You know, it's the card. It's the card that you probably won't see. Well, it's online. You can see it. If you get to see this, you'll see it. I'm keeping the promise, you know, my hand, your mom's hand, together. And as Erica Lee wrote, they are one until death. I'm keeping the promise. I have one lady and one lady alone. You can watch Marriage Defined in A Commitment Beyond. I'm keeping the promise. Watch the Keeping the Promise video that Eric Lee did. Superb. It took me 66 years to enter an athletic event and to get the medal, which again, you know, it's just, you completed it, you know, not that big deal. But of the 99 that ran, yeah, I was only number 83. But I was the only race walker. And it appears that I'm probably in the top 10 nationwide. Because race walk, I'm not, you know, again, I can't run. I can't do anything coordinated. I can't do things with strength and whatnot. I do jumping jacks a lot now, too. now I do 1,000 jumping jacks a day. Just not a problem. But I can walk, and I can walk fast. So that's what defines me. Being a fast walker doesn't make me superior, doesn't bring me value to the table. But whatever the man in your life, your husband does, stand with him. Encourage him. You know, don't encourage him to be a bank robber. You know, but if it's something like this, athletic, if it's something, again, whatever. And it's not just the events, but the daily life. Be glad he's there in your life and show that to him. I would contend, you know, in 1 Corinthians, you'll see, it's very clear. This is obedience to Christ. Ephesians 5, it's obedience to Christ. 1 Peter, it's obedience to Christ. Susanna, the model you set before you is not obedience to Christ in the house that you live. Live it yourself, though. Please. I was going to do something short. This should go in the mail. Again, it may be a week or two because I need to show it to Miss Lillian. But I want you to have it. I want it in your hands so you know about your dad. And remember, I'm sending you the shirt. Run for the freedom. I remember one more thing. One of the moments that really struck me when I was at the pregnancy care center, because I would go there frequently. Yeah, we had one building, then we moved to another, then we moved to another, and now they moved to another. But the first building we had, I was there once during the day. A lady came for a pregnancy test. I don't remember results or any details. And she needed a ride home. And I was asked, would you give her a ride home? Said, absolutely, not a problem. What struck me is I did drive her home. And I wondered what it looked like. Obviously, I did what I thought was right as an act of love. And I believe it was right and it was an act of love. But what did it look like? Because here's a guy driving up to this house. At the time, I was driving a nice, shiny new BMW. And she's a young black lady. What does that look like? And that is really, it sunk in with me. Because one of the things I think about is when I deal with people, especially now, I'm very aware some people have issues. It's like the women I saw at the race. You know, you wonder about them. You know, I can't remember her name. Last name begins with an H, I think. We had a wonderful relationship at the Pregnancy Care Center. She and her husband were a delight to interact with. She was actually on staff. You know, I wrote a paycheck because I was treasurer for a while. I wish I could remember her name. She would play the guitar a lot. And one of the things I saw in her was a compassion level that was phenomenal, especially to women who have aborted their babies. Because if I recall correctly, she aborted 6 or 7 and had a radical change in life. And that endeared me to her. And it's one of the examples of so many I see where somebody goes through huge sin and the grace of God grabs them. It's marvelous. And I strive when I interact with people to make sure there's no condemnation. When I get to engage somebody deep on theology, I don't compromise, but I strive not to condemn. And especially when there's no theology directly discussed, I want to make sure all they see from me is grace. I want to reflect my Creator well. It's a model I hope you will consider as a woman, not as a man. And again, the man you marry is a jerk. Love him because you can't get better. There's no one better than a jerk. Love him well, and you can make him or break him. Love him well in obedience to Christ. Find joy in him. And one last thing. Again, a ridiculously long video. On May 19th, 1990, your mom and I became one. I promised at that time to do what I can to live to be 90. Here's my evidence. I'm keeping the promise. I made a promise never to turn from her. I'm keeping the promise. I'm pursuing reconciliation. If you go to family.kozlowski.org, compare that to anyone's effort to reconcile a family. Seriously, I say, it looks like I may be in the top 10 nationwide for a 66-year-old race walker. When it comes to someone trying to reconcile a family, I'm probably in that arena. I love my wife, Dorothy Jane Kozlowski is my wife. Again, Romans 7, 1 Corinthians 7, and a whole bunch of other places. Turning to the state. The state doesn't define marriage. The Lord does. And as I've described before, and I'll repeat again, marriage begins with sex and ends with death. And I'll take anyone on that from the scripture. Marriage begins with sex and ends with death. Please keep that in mind with the man you fall in love with. And tell my wife, your mom, the woman I love and adore, please, I love her, and I want her back.